Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So that's not just intelligence as in knowledge, but emotional intelligence. And then skills is every day you learn a new skill. You've got to add, you know, layer up your skill sets.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyrone Shum, and in this episode, we continue the conversation with successful property investor and owner of Blue Gum Property, David Glover. Learn about his 17-lot project, how he managed to flip a property and make hundreds of thousands of dollars despite untoward circumstances, and much, much more. Glover, who studied engineering at university, still also works in the engineering space alongside his wife as he makes leaps and bounds when it comes to property.
I retired out of engineering, well, semi-officially about 4 years ago. I finished a couple of Australian projects that we worked on. And then, but funny enough, my wife's company is an engineering company. So we're actually doing AI technology in the mining, lumber, defense space. So, part of my time at the moment is actually still but working in our own business. And, we've got six people and we're working to develop Invelo into a much bigger organization, and that is all engineering. And currently working on a robotic gold mine in Queensland, so I'm pretty much leading the charge on that project. And but funny enough, the guy that I'm working with on that mining project, he has a pathways education facility, and I've been putting together a 21 or 17 adjoining blocks, but we can go to 21 up at Caboolture, using a combination of call option contracts and a few other types of contracts. And he's become our off-taker through his network for that project. And it's so funny how the world works, isn't it, Tyrone, sometimes?
You're currently still doing engineering consulting for, you know, larger companies and projects like that. Is that what you mean?
Well, no, I suppose I'm like my wife's PA, to tell you the truth. So Shana's fellow. I look after some stuff around Shana. She uses me as a sounding board for what's going on. I've been running the project controls for and setting up the systems for that business in the background. And so I'm not client facing at all. I'm basically facing my wife and helping her. He's my client and it's our business. So, you know, it's a substantial business already. And so that's it's fun, you know. I love doing that sort of stuff. You know, you're creating your own business, and and one that's resilient. We have a very dear friend of ours that has a wonderful business in Australia called Aspen Medical, and so I've seen Glenn's journey there. His dad was my property mentor and my hero in everything, and so we've been blessed to have that network and inspiration, and also the fact that we can understand from them and get an insight from their systems and processes and how to set up and run a good business.
Glover, tell us a little bit more about Ray, how he met him and his importance in his life.
Ray was Shana's, we call him grandfather, but so he was a family friend of Shana's. And so when I came over to Newcastle, Shana and I were riding horses together, and that was Ray's horses that we were riding. And so that's how I met Ray. Shana and Ray were very close. Ray gave Shana away at our wedding, and he had a career through the Air Force. And then Ray's wife and himself, Lauren Ray, had built a portfolio. They had a business. They were able to, back in those days, talk to the bank manager to get, you know, like a loan across the business, what you now call an overdraft. And they went into doing property and cosmetic renos. And I used to go and help Ray, you know, fix all these, you know, little issues at this massive block of units at Hamilton. And then it dawned on me that Ray owned the whole lot. And so Ray was this awesome guy. He'd always wear shorts and, you know, would eat his lunch out of the back of the car and fixed all the lights and all that sort of stuff. And he taught me a lot about cosmetic renovations and, yeah, just, you know, being on the tools together. And, you know, we laid lots of carpets in places together. And, yeah, and then Lorna was definitely the brains behind them. She was wonderful. She'd obviously, she knew a lot about bookkeeping and how to do that. And they raised a beautiful family. And Ray and Lorna were extremely generous with their time and experiences. And, yeah, he was, yeah, a real inspiration, a real hero to me.
Wow, that's amazing. And he's obviously got a quite successful portfolio, especially you mentioned him owning that block of units. What else do you think you also learned from him too? So you learned a bit of cosmetic renos, you know, he mentioned character.
Yeah, Ray was, yeah, the most amazing man.
He delves into a fascinating property project where he has been focusing recently, which involves core option contracts and conversations with the council.
Yeah, this year I focused very much on, I came back wanting to do a bit more with other people's property and other people's money as a journey. And so I started to work a lot more on call option contracts. So funny enough, we started with a mate of mine a few years ago. We'd identified a great project opportunity and we'd taken a toehold, and then off I went and started to talk to other people about doing a project, and it was actually just going to be storage units, okay? And so it was a project, and, you know, it was starting to involve, you know, other people, which is a journey in itself when you start to learn how to help other people and coach. And it's tough when you, you know, it involves money and discussions around that with other people. So that's a good journey in itself. So then I started to get into, you know, applying call option contracts, which took us to a group of six. And so it was looking really good for massive storage units, you know, one that you do the DA or you just flip off to National Storage or someone. So so we're getting ready for that. But then more and more people joined the project, and it evolved out to up to then 20,000 square meters. And so I had a real problem to solve, because then it was something way out of my my little world. And so we started going and having conversations about, so you start dropping the word like precinct instead of project, you know. So we're like, oh, is this a health area, or is this an education or an entertainment? So you start delving into suburb analysis, where you go, this is not only what I could do, but this is what the suburb really needs. And so then you start to say, well, okay, well, who do we need? What stakeholders do we need to involve? So you're like, let's talk to council. Let's talk to people. Let's talk to people that would, you know, want to have an aged care facility or an entertainment complex there. And then maybe I sort of was in that hunt when I, you know, said to Shane about it, and he's like, well, we're looking for an education precinct. And I was like, okay. And all those conversations with council, and an awesome councillor up there that, you know, of the area, he'd given us a really good tour of his vision of Caboolture. And so we were like, great, Councillor Hayne, that's an awesome vision. Love it, shared it big time, and said, and then funny enough, I'm in Melbourne a week later, and Shane goes, oh, you know, we really need a place that's got an agricultural vision and somewhere with aviation. I'm like, oh, wow, have you ever heard of Caboolture? And he was like, yeah, well, actually I have. And so so off it went from there.
In regards to this project, Glover explains in more detail the numbers and what kind of area or community it will turn into when it's done.
We're working through at the moment. We've currently got 17 adjoining titles together. I've got 10 call option contracts and a mixture of other commercial agreements on the other seven, and potential to go to 21. And Yeah, around sort of 35,000 square meters. And so now we're off learning all about pathways, educations and requirements for students that, you know, need accommodation. And there's a huge growth market in year 9 to year 12. There's a lot of education being required outside of the mainstream school education. So we believe we've got another line there to follow. I'm going to keep looking for places that will provide these educational facilities, so you build them the right way, and then yeah, it's think of sort of like a TAFE type of idea where you have hairdressing shops and motor mechanic shops and all that built into your facility, which has led to trying to get the money for it, which is a whole new journey in itself the last 3 months.
Glover lets us know what a core option is and how it can help someone purchase property in the future with a set time frame and price.
So call option gives you the ability to purchase someone's property. So it's like a forward-facing contract. So you simply say, yeah, we sort of want to put all these titles together, but I can't buy you out right now. But I can. What we'd like to do is put the project together. So we need a commercial ability to put adjoining titles together. We need to find someone to fund the development application that would go across all of the titles. So there's your value add, right? So the DA would always stay with the title. So you need to have that vision about what you're trying to create. So we said to everyone, look, we want to build these big storage units, right? So it fits into the town plan. We can put the DA together. Once we have the DA approved, we'll either try and execute it by getting it funded ourselves, or we sell it to someone that does mass storage unit, and there's about six of those companies in Australia, right? So that was the vision and the plan. And you go, so the call option agreement gives you the ability to be able to purchase that at some time in the future with the time frame at a set price, and yeah, you provide value to the title holders because they're going to get a large uplift. They don't need to spend the money themselves on the DA, and individually they can't do anything except really big market price, where we can effectively offer them 20 to 25% more by the fact that if you collaborate, then you can then do a large enough project that an off-taker can extract enough value out of to be able to. So it's a value lift everywhere. When you look at it, it's a win-win-win situation all around.
So essentially, you're creating a whole new community because you're able to join, say, these 17 lots together to form something that's going to be substantial with commercial, residential, and so forth, which is amazing. And the good thing is you don't have to necessarily purchase all these properties outright, because I'm just couldn't imagine how much it costs to purchase all these, but you're able to go through and do the DA process and work with council and get all this in place. So there would be, I would assume there'd be very strong, tight contracts in place, because what happens if, say, for example, one of the lots do decide to change, or a bunch of them decide to change their mind, don't want to go ahead? What happens in those kind of scenarios?
For sure, then you're done, because it, yeah, no, it's true. I mean, they own the title at all times. So the call option contract, they can't get out of. They give you that window for that time and it's locked in place. And so they can't, but the other ones that we have different, so more like joint venture type documents with, yeah, they could pull out. And if they do, we have backup plans. Like, we can break the project into smaller ones, or we can literally build around them. Yeah, being an engineer, I've got a lot of contingencies in there. But you've also got to have it goes past a bit of trust in this. You've got to end up with a bit of faith as well. So you have to develop rapport, then you've got to develop trust, and then, it's got to be seen as a collective effort. And so they don't see you as a developer or the enemy, right? It's just seen as a collaborative effort, and a call option contract is just the commercial tool that we utilize to be able to achieve what we're trying to do.
I've heard a lot of success stories behind that, because a lot of people haven't had to spend too much money except for the DA. And the DA, I don't know roughly how much it costs for a project like this, but you know, they can range in the six figures to be able to do projects like this. Is that correct to say?
Yes.
So you're really spending the money up front to try and put all this project together, to get it done through and approved through council without having to necessarily purchase these blocks. And hopefully, once that's all been approved, the uplift across the blocks should be able to return the title owners an uplift at least minimum 20% by the sounds of it. And then the future commercial dealings and yourself will be able to take a reasonable size, profit from it as well too. So it's win-win for everyone.
Win-win-win, yeah. Win for the community, win for the current owners. And I like to look at it that way. It's a win-win-win for everyone.
Glover tells us about a time when he made hundreds of thousands of dollars by flipping a property despite untoward circumstances.
I did a development application on one of the... So when we moved up here to a place near Beenleigh, and I brought it knowing that I could subdivide it. So we did the DA where we could change it to a 14 block community. And so we did the DA and I was so focused on going through to building 14 houses, right? And I had my funding lined up and everything, and I went to go and get my operational work permits. And at the time, my funder, the Commonwealth Bank, had their first big issue with their mortgage brokers, and they went quiet for 2 weeks. And so I was wanting to execute this DA of 14 subdivision, and then my funding had vaporized. Funny enough, I'd already had two people chasing me to buy the project off me, and so I flipped it, and I sat back and I went, wow, I just made hundreds of thousands of dollars, basically by all the work that I did on the engineering of doing the DA and the execution plans and having it ready to go. And that was where I really learned my skill set, was in the project planning phase and the commercials up front, the organization, and that the actual execution and the groundworks and all that was not my place. So I'm much better in the vision and the putting it together, and best for me to sell at that stage and get out. So that was great learning through some very awkward moments. It's very stressful when that happens.
That's a great thing, because one, it can mitigate the risk when you think about it sort of strategically, because to actually go ahead and a build, there's also additional cost that's involved, and time as well, and potentially opportunity cost.
Getting your money out is hard.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I was just thinking, you've actually exited perfectly at the right time, because not only have you also completed the management of the whole project, but you've also made quite a lot of money behind it too. So like, how long did that project take roughly to get the DA approved?
Not too bad. It only takes about 6 months.
Gosh, that's amazing. Now, who wouldn't love to do things like that? This is where I think listeners would be probably leaning in and go, hey, David, tell us a little bit more how you did more of these kind of deals.
We made 80 grand in 5 weeks only last year on a title split. Yeah, there's ways to do it, but you've got to find the right properties that have the titles that will allow you to do it. But title splits are a very lucrative spot, but you've got to have a lot of knowledge. You've got to know how to find them. You've got to know how to negotiate them, hold them. You got to get it through council. Yeah, there's a lot to it. Yeah. 20 years of experience before you get to do that, I'm afraid.
Prior to these kinds of projects, Glover lets us know what he did in the world of property and also informs us of the importance of getting on the ground and doing the work to execute projects and bring life to them.
Mainly cosmetic renovations, the Airbnbs, the title splits, all that occurred until I did that DA, and then started to realize that it's better for me to now work more in finding these properties. So as a buyer's agent, I can find these opportunities, but I've also got the team, the capability to execute. It's one thing, everyone can show you a PowerPoint presentation and a great email that says, yeah, you'll get 7%. And if you do a cosmetic reno, it'll go up by 30 grand. That's okay on an email, but someone still has to execute those projects. You've still got to have boots on the ground, hands in gloves, skip bins, that's where you're really, it's one thing to say it on paper. It's another to deliver it on the ground. So we're good at that.
Yes, and that's the other thing. There's so many things that could potentially come up that's unforeseen when you're doing a renovation, because until you start ripping things apart, you don't know what's behind it. So, you know, there could be delays, there could be additional things that require extra costs. And that's the challenge that we all face and we know with renovations. But at the same time, if you're doing what you're doing, which is getting DA approval, subdividing, title searches, all that kind of stuff, it's kind of a process really of managing and a bit of paper shuffling. But at the end of the day, you know the end result is that you're going to get something greater for the community, but not all on top of that, you also make money as well too with less intense work.
Yeah, the Shell Street project's been very systemized. How can you put 17 blocks together if you don't have a very good system behind you? You know, CRMs, we're dealing with over 120 people in that project. So you have to run a very good systems, not only in communication and feedback to people, you got to run commercial systems. Systemizing a business is, it's a journey in itself.
Going back to the 17 lot project, Glover takes us through the steps he has taken so far in trying to complete it.
We identified the opportunity 2 years ago. We took our first toehold a couple of years ago, and then I got distracted on a couple of mining projects and a couple other property projects, and then got refocused onto it, and it actually has been a six-month journey. So we put our first block together, a call option contract, 6 months ago, and then over the last 6 months, once we went from that, well, I suppose, Firebase, you know, where we had those six titles, we've now having people come to us and the adjoining neighbours and wanting to join the project. So the last addition came from a neighbour who said, oh, I really want to join your project. And so that's been good. It took 6 months of talking to everybody, to knocking on doors, talking to people, to expand that out. It takes at least 3 months to go through commercial negotiations with people. And then you've got to find your off-taker. And that's been probably the journey about there has been the last 4 months, finding the off-taker. And that included also, I spent a lot of time in Melbourne talking to the finance world, trying to put together. So when I said other people's money, it's things like, so you could do a joint venture in a way, or you could take private lending from people, or you can find a property syndicate. And so we just got the phone call a couple of days ago as well that said we finally got the property syndicate authorized. So that's through a Vicalic Finance, who Nick just got his first major property syndicate authorization. He's got a financial license, he's very good in the finance world, and sometimes now that's opening up huge opportunities for us now, because now I've got a whole list of people that will loan me money privately, but I also have an opportunity now to tap a syndicated source of funds. So we will go with a joint venture with this off-taker, and we will it's a family operation that have a mining and a construction background. So we will complete our commercials with them. But if all that falls down, I can always fall back to the syndicate. So it's an interesting time at the moment.
Glover informs us as to what exactly an off-taker is.
A person that's going to take the project. So in this case, the Greater Brisbane Pathways Education Centre is the off-taker, the buyer of the project. So they will, and effectively the money funder. So for me to pay out all the contracts, the money's got to come from the off-taker. So you think of it in mining terms, right? The off-taker is the person that buys our product that we produce, and it's the same in project world. The off-taker is the purchaser of the property.
He also tells us what his job is as someone who's putting together these lots and how these projects make money.
Two structures, yeah. We're actually, because we're putting a business in, and we'll have an entity that owns the actual buildings, and then we'll have an entity that actually runs the education pathways. And then things like, you'll make money off billboards and putting on a telecom tower and all that sort of stuff that we do as well.
Furthermore, he tells us how long he needs to finish this project.
We've got at least another 6 to 12 months of commercials to tidy this right through. We'll construct probably we'll want to start constructing by the end of 2020. I think I've got about a 2-year construction timeline. So we'll put our first students in definitely by 2023.
Wow. So this is definitely not for the faint-hearted.
No, it's not.
Coming up after the break, we'll delve into the many excellent resources David Glover has utilized on his property journey.
And I'll mix it up with marketing, you know, Australian marketing as well. You know, Timbo Reid's really good.
The habit that has made a big difference in his everyday life and contributed to his success.
It's been a lifesaver. The last 12 months, you know, like, because I still, well, I've gone back to play. I play Masters AFL, and that requires a certain amount of fitness.
His greatest advice for when it comes to giving back to the world and society.
Explain to people what you're trying to achieve. And, you know, and Rotary just does a fantastic service to the world and to the local environment.
And that's next. I'm Tyrone Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. Glover shares with us his love for reading and the kind of topics he reads about, including a book recommendation of a volume that has inspired him.
I'm a big reader. I probably read a book a week at least. I've read a lot all over my life, lots of various stuff, and I'm not, you know, afraid to sit down with people that are 20 years older than me, and I always try and learn their story. It's just a wealth of experience. So books, I podcast regularly. So every morning at the gym, it's a property. So twice a week, I listen to you. I've got Brian Buffini's a big influencer of mine in America. I love Brian's stuff. But I also spend some time with people like Brooke Castillo that does, you know, she's very good on mindset stuff. And I'll mix it up with marketing, you know, Australian marketing as well. You know, Timbo Reid's really good. So you got to mix it all up. You got to go far and wide in what you're listening to. Be careful on who you listen to. And but then when you find your tribe, you know, stick to them. Yeah, listen to their podcasts. I read a lot. It gives me a chance to read. I'm very tactile. So I love John Hale's book, The Strategy Book. And, you know, he was the first book where he actively wants you to doodle inside the book. Like, grab the book and he gives you space to really write a lot of notes. So if you take, you know, something like Rich Dad or Poor Dad, it's a very compressed book and you might be trying to underline things, but it's, you know, it's a bit messy, where John exploded it so you could build out your models and create visual models of what you're trying to achieve.
He goes on to tell us more about The Strategy Book by John Hale and what he believes makes it so useful.
John Hale's just released, it's a strategy book, and John's a very spiritual man himself, and he's released it on Amazon, and he's only been out about a month, and he's into his second book right now. And it's called Strategy, and he's got a 6-step process in there, and it basically is great for you to get some focus around you yourself and sort of the value that your business is going to provide.
That's a first I've heard of, in being able to allow people to do that, you know, in a book, because sometimes when I'm reading a book, I just don't want to like write in it, because I like things that are clean and neat. But if he's saying, you know, there's space for you to do that, I think that's great, because it interacts in the book, because people don't get to do that anymore.
And I like your spiritual aspect as well. It's the world of property and business is losing its faith and spirituality, and I think we need some of that back.
When asked about what's the best advice he has ever received on his journey, Glover is quick to answer.
My nana always told me to find my limit. And I always responded to her, yep, I found it, but I kind of overshot it, didn't I?
For Glover, physical exercise is extremely important and something which he does on a regular basis for reasons which he shares in detail.
It's been a lifesaver. The last 12 months, you know, like, because I still, well, I've gone back to play. I play Masters AFL, and that requires a certain amount of fitness. And so I realized, you know, I got the mid-40s and I probably wasn't as fit as I ever used to be. And, you know, you deal with, you know, a lot of mental health journeys. Everyone does, you know. And so the gym has been a fantastic arena to complement, you know, my AFL Masters fitness. And we did some park runs this year as well, and we did some of the charity runs. And, yeah, you've got to underpin your week around physical activity. That's the start. That then leads on to what you do with your alcohol intake. It leads on to what you do with your food intake. It leads on to how you interact with people. You know, if you get a good start of the day in the gym and you've listened to a good podcast, then you generally tend to find that you have a good coffee with someone, you interact better with people. You've got to watch our interactions. You know, I think social media has created a shortness in the world that needs to be counteracted with, more coffee and more coffee conversations, I call them.
He also gives us some life advice when it comes to giving back to the world and society.
Go find an organization. If you can't give 10% of your salary to an organization that's doing well in the world, then go give 10% of your time. I love our Rotary group. I've been part of the Rotary group here for a little while now, and I see that as 10% of my time giving back to service above oneself. And they've got wonderful creeds. You know, we've got the 4-way test, and you've got to stand up every week, and you have to basically justify what you've done in the world to make it a better place. Not justify, that's the wrong word, but explain to people what you're trying to achieve. And Rotary just does a fantastic service to the world and to the local environment. So you need to find something in your life. If you can't give 10% of your salary, then give 10% of your time.
If Glover could meet himself 10 years ago, he would have several pieces of advice for him.
Need to slow down, slow down, not so much what I was, trying to do, but I would have told him, slow down, think through things to another level a bit more, seek better mentors, don't be afraid of coaching, listen to advice, there's people out there that will nudge you along in the right way, and there's some, I suppose, in the wrong way. But I should have thought through to a deeper level. It's challenging. 10 years ago is when we were bringing kids into the world, I think that in itself is a journey too, isn't it?
So let's talk a little bit about the last question I wanted to ask you. So how much of your success is due to your skill, intelligence, hard work, and how much of it is because of luck?
No luck. Skill's okay. Intelligence is okay. Hard work is good. So it's a combination of, for me, probably too much hard work. Probably could have worked smarter, probably. Intelligence is always expanding. I try and read a lot. I'm getting better at understanding the right questions to people to really understand, intent and understanding and getting to a deeper level of knowledge there. And then, so that's not just intelligence that's in knowledge, but emotional intelligence. And then skills is every day you learn a new skill. You've got to add, layer up your skill sets. Always try and, it was a journey to try and learn how to play AFL a couple of years ago. My kicking was horrible, but 2 years later, you finally nail it. I might get more than 1 point. You never know.
Thank you to David Glover, our guest on this episode of Property Investory.